go. Right. Just a little bit on the topography of Bristol. They say it wasn't around in Roman times, although various workmen in Victorian times scooped up hordes of Roman coins with their bowler hats and then skedaddled with them. But it definitely was here in Saxon times, and it's a lot older than 1,000 years. Where we've been is basically the centre of the old Saxon city, or town as it was then. It was a border town, a wild border town, on the border between the West Saxons and the Mercians. There was a Mercian church here, St. Werburgh's, named after a Mercian princess. And the whole town sort of spread out from this crossroads here. This has been lived on or lived in for well over 1,000 years. And to some extent, it's a bit of a shame that it's not lived in or worked on now. I'm just giving you that to give you a little bit of a sense of how St. Wulfstan found it. St. Wulfstan was a saint of the 11th century. He was the last Anglo-Saxon bishop. He was confessor to both King Harold and William the Conqueror. He was a very pious man. He became the patron saint of peasants and the patron saint of vegetarians. And his deeds were many and varied. And he's not very well known in Bristol, but he was the first man to try and stop the slave trade. Bristol had been known for over 400 years at that time of exporting slaves to Dublin in Ireland. Dublin was the centre for slaves in Western Europe, really. It was then in the possession of the Vikings, and they were very avid slave dealers and traders. Bristol traders used to add value to their slaves from all the wars and so forth, the disputes surrounding about the dispossessed, the homeless and all that. They were carted here and then transported off to Ireland, as I say. Mostly Ireland, but that was the main market. They say that St. Patrick may have been one of those people that they carted off. There's not conclusive proof of that. Anyway, as I say, Wulfstan was a pious man. He was responsible for the Doomsday Book in this area. He was Bishop of Worcester, and the Sea of Worcester came right down to the River Avon, which was sort of like the boundary of the Sea of Worcester. When he was here doing the Doomsday Book, or thereabouts, he discovered these poor slaves in the slave pens along what is now Baldwin Street. The River Frome, we've already said, it was diverted in medieval times in 1240, but prior to that, the river came along here, and Wulfstan could see the slaves in the slave pens here ready for dispatch to Ireland, and he set about preaching every Sunday to try and get this slave trade banned. He was successful in the end. He recruited Lanfranc, who was the Bishop of Canterbury, French-speaking Bishop of Canterbury. Lanfranc and Wulfstan managed to petition William the Conqueror, who was getting a rake on these slaves, to actually stop the trade. The trade didn't die out, unfortunately, because 2 centuries later, Henry II, who also used to live around these here parts, he notified the then English Pope of the existence of English slaves still in Ireland and justified his initial conquest of Ireland on those grounds. Anyway, going back to the 11th century and Wulfstan's time here, the Bristol people realised that he was really on their side, and they were quite pleased that he was banning the slave trade. And it's the first recorded instance of the Bristol mob rising, where they grabbed hold of one of the more evil slave traders and put his eyes out. Anyway, that was his recompense for doing all his dirty deeds. Wulfstan went on then. He lived till he was 90. He died doing his daily chore of washing the feet of a dozen poor. But he was a really pious man, and it would be really nice, now we've got some success with a fellow called Clarkson, but we'll see a bit later on, if we could have a little bit for St. Wulfstan. Thank you very much.
Hello, everybody here at the back. I'm going to briefly talk about the Bristol Bridge Massacre of 1793.
Now, for those that can see, over there on the right-hand side is Bristol Bridge.
And that was one of the main thoroughfares into Bristol in the 18th century. Now, Dan, who spoke earlier about Castle Green usage, said about this being one of the major centres of shopping, but also we know about Wine Street, Corn Street, It's Not the Nail and all that. This is where the market was situated. This is where the centre of Bristol, the centre of commerce was situated. At the time, as I said, this was the main thoroughfare, but it looked completely different. On both sides of the bridge, there'd have been houses and shops, like Mrs. Miggins' pie shop and stuff like that, you know. So travellers would come in and out selling their wares and what have you. But also, very importantly, there'd be a toll gate, or sometimes known as a turnpike there. Now, in this day and age, yeah, before the highways commission and such like, local authorities would basically flog the rights to upkeep a certain stretch of roads to the highest bidder, and they would put an act in to raise the money via a toll gate. So basically there was an understanding between also the populace who used it that the toll gate and the money via that toll gate was used for the refurbishment and keeping up of the thoroughfare. Now the bridge was very famous because, as I said, it was used on a daily basis by hundreds of Bristolians, people from Bath, the Kingswood colliers bringing their coal in and such likes, you know, so they kept an eye on it. And a lot of people knew that the actual act was about to expire, that the amount of money they'd raised from it had probably paid for all the improvements, so they were expecting for the toll gate to be taken down. And sure enough, in 1793, it seemed as if that was going to be the case. The act was about to run out, and a bloke called Hiscock, who actually had the rights over the toll gate, was very clear that he wasn't going to ask to increase it for a further period of time. And the populace heard about this, they came down. As the toll gate was a bit unpopular, there wasn't anybody actually collecting the tolls anymore, it was just sort of dissipating, they ripped it down and had a blooming good bonfire. There's another very impressive thing about Bristol that, as Bristolians, you all should be very proud of. You were very famous for having a good riot or two when you felt the need. There were food riots, market riots, there was toll gate riots, there was wage riots, the Kingswood colliers were kicking off every half hour, there was a religious riot, you know, and the Bristol populace, when they felt badly done by, they would get off their bums and do something about it. But at this time, there was no conflict. They thought the toll gate was down and they were actually having a party. However, some leaders of the corporation, which was the local government at the time, don't forget, it's a city and county, and that was very important, realised that this was a good wage earner. They could get a couple of bob here. Can anybody hear me? Yeah? They could get a couple of bob here. So basically they said, we're going to rebuild the turnpikes. And not being the brightest set of people, they decided to rebuild it on a Saturday. Now, Saturday is the worst time to do anything for like that. For starters, it's market day, so everybody's coming in and out. It's really busy. And the other most important point is wage day. So most people are getting paid, and they're in the boozers dotted around here, sinking a few. Obviously, I was talking as the workmen were out there putting the toll gates up, and basically a lot of people got together, decided a bit of direct action was the best way to explain to the corporation, and they ripped down the toll gates and made a merry bonfire. In the meantime, a bloke called George Dornby turned up. Now, George Dornby, also known as Vain George, didn't have many friends at the time. He was a big lad, bit of a bully, bit of a bigot, liked to brawl, but he also liked the working classes and etc. etc. to be in their place. And if he said there was going to be a toll gate, there was going to be a toll gate. So he came down here, running up and down, waving his arms about, moaning and shouting, and basically the local populace were just taking the mickey out of him. There were a couple of brawls and scuffles and such likes, but eventually Dornby realised that he was having no effect, so he called out the militia. Now, in the 18th century, the militia were like a standing army. There was very little democracy in this country, as I'm sure you're aware. Very few people could actually vote, but you could actually get picked by ballot to go and serve in the militia for 3 years, whether you liked it or not. Of course, away from your family, you had to go and serve in different parts of the country, because they'd always have the militia. If it was raised in Bristol, it would be on the streets of somewhere else, so you wouldn't actually be asked to be firing against your brothers and sisters, etc., etc. So, another really important bit about the militia, there was one way out of it. You could pay a £10 dividend to get out of it. So obviously the rich could get out of it, but once again the poor would be serving in the militia. Now Dornby had shot off waving his arms about, and basically the turnpikes were down they turned into ashes. It was basically dissipating, and most people were going about their business, and the actual crowd was starting to dissipate. But then they heard the drums and the pipes of the militia. That it was the militia from Hereford, and there had been a bit of conflict before with the Hereford militia, so it was a bit previous, if you like. And they came over the hill there and were coming down towards the Bristol Bridge. Now, what this actually happened was, A, the rioters came back to see what was going on, but also other people came along just to see what's all the fuss about, what's going on. So a bigger crowd, if anything, so rather than actually further dissipating the crowd, when the militia came, a bigger crowd turned up. By this time, Dornbeard completely and utterly lost it, and he was shouting abuse at all sorts. And eventually, he read the Riot Act, which apparently very few people could hear because he was so angry that he wouldn't actually make himself understood properly. And then he ordered the militia to fire. 11 people were murdered on that bridge by that. Most of them weren't even rioters. There was one bloke who was shot in the thigh who died of blood, a bloke called John Taylor, if my memory serves me right. He was actually coming home from work, a bit like the geezer who was just killed at the G20, Ian Tomlinson. Mind his own business, had a look round the corner, ended up with a shot in his thigh, bled. And at that day, that could be fatal, you know, he just bled to death. One of the most interesting things about it, I think, is the coroner returned a verdict on these 11 deaths of murder by persons or persons unknown, which was a big move at the time, and the corporation put a lot of pressure on this coroner to change his verdict, and my understanding is he refused. However, nobody from the militia was prosecuted, nor was Dornby, and unfortunately, I've got to tell you, the turnpikes did go up again. Okay.
Bristol Bridge Massacre.
Bristol Bridge Massacre. We'll avenge it later. Yeah?
Okay.
I'm on my own.